Hey, it's Stephen Henderson, the host of Created Equal, with just a little info about how we're changing things at WDET. Detroit Today, the show I hosted for 9 years here on WDET, is now an archived show. Created Equal, which is a deep dive into issues that explore the tensions between opportunity and inequality in our country, is our new show. It's live each weekday from 9 to 10 a.m. on 101.9 FM in Detroit. You can also hear a re-air at 7 p.m. every weekday. And you can find Created Equal as well on your podcast app of choice or at WDET.org. So come on over and subscribe to Created Equal. Let us know what you think of this new show on the WDET mobile app. Just download it and hit the open mic button in the bottom right corner.
This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Welcome to Created Equal, a new show here at WDET, Detroit's public radio station, hosted by me, Stephen Henderson. So let's start here. That theme music, that driving, rhythmic, funky tune that plays under quotes from men and women who have invoked phrases that speak to equality and its power. My goodness, I don't think we could have come up with a better way to start this show each day. So right off the rip, thanks to Sam Bobian, the genius musician and technical advisor here at WDET, who created that. If you've listened to this station in this time slot at any point in the last 9 years, I guess you probably know me and know what we do here. I've been hosting Detroit Today since January of 2015, and what a ride that has been. A daily show about our city, what's going on in it, and how we should be thinking about what's going on in it. But over that 9 years, there have been some real revelations on my part and some strong themes that emerged that really paved the way to this new show, Created Equal. Think about the intense series of discussions we had, for instance, in early 2017 as a new president, Donald Trump, turned on immigrants. The very people who make Detroit, Detroit, and who make America, America. Think about the book club series we did with Flint Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha after the water crisis there poisoned an entire city of mostly poor, mostly black people. Think about the summer we spent talking about invisibility in our city and nation in the tradition of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, a treatise on the ways that inequality gets overlooked and is unseen. Or think about the profound loss and the wrenching pain of the pandemic, and how we still woke each day to greet each other on Detroit Today, to talk about what was happening, and to figure out just how to survive. We used that shell, that name of Created Equal, to frame all of that work on Detroit Today over the last 9 years. And now what we want to do is pull that thread forward and let it weave its own full cloth. Let it create a wonderful new repository of work that examines our city and its powerful resonance in the narratives and arguments that are roiling Americans today. I mean, this is Detroit, not just our city, but America's city in so many ways. There are so many things about Detroit, its history, its firsts, its incredible story that tell us a lot about what's going on in the nation right now. And when it comes to quintessential American institutions, things like the promise of opportunity and the challenge of inequality, well, Detroit is ground zero for understanding those things in our country. We invented and then perfected mass manufacturing here, and then we watched as it helped build the middle class all over the country. At the same time, we've had epic struggles making sure that good fortune is available to everyone and that people aren't left behind because of their race or class or religious belief. And of course, we are ground zero as a cultural force, the kind of place where art and music find power and purpose. That's what we want to talk about in this new space, on this new show, Created Equal. The promises and challenges that stare us in the face as a nation, and how we can better understand those things through discussion and inquiry, always inquiry, right here in Detroit, the city that built America. I can't wait to get started with this, and I can't wait for you, our listeners, to join me on this journey. So let's go. It's time for Created Equal. We've got two great guests with us to kick this off. Jamon Jordan is the official historian for the city of Detroit, and Desiree Cooper is a writer, activist, and poet whose work does an amazing job of crystallizing issues of equality and opportunity. Jamon and Desiree, welcome to Created Equal.
I'm so happy to be here on the new show.
Yeah, it's great to have. Amazing.
Yeah, it's great to have both of you here, primarily because I feel like as much as anyone that I've talked to over the last 9 years of recording Detroit Today, the two of you have inspired a lot of the thinking that goes into this creation of this new show. The conversations that I've had with you, Jamon, and with you, Desiree, have really pointed us in the direction of the importance of talking about inequality, of opportunity, of the importance of Detroit in the conversation about all of those things. And, you know, this is the time, I feel like, when we have got to have those conversations. This is the this is the place to have them. Jamon, I'm going to start with you. Just give us a sense of what you think those themes mean right now and here in the city.
Yeah. So, just for so long, because as a historian, for so long, I'm always looking at the past. For so long, what we've experienced is these different versions of inequality. Growing up, particularly in the city of Detroit, but really growing up in America. Particularly in the city of Detroit, we've seen these things. We've seen this level of inequality. We've seen where there were neighborhoods that African Americans couldn't live in. There were suburban communities that created ordinances to keep us out of their parks. We've of course, seen instances of police brutality against African Americans. We've seen schools being unequal. So we've seen all these different versions of inequality. We've grown up with it. We've never fully accepted it. We've always fought against it in different ways, but we have understood that this is a part of life in America, but definitely a part of life in the city of Detroit. So we need to be having these conversations because, of course, we're coming into where we're living in an era where there are people who are almost willing to state that they want inequality for certain groups of people. They're going up to the edge of saying that we don't mind the fact that people are treated unequally, and we want that to be the standard. They're not hiding behind language that sounds like they don't want what they want. They're saying it almost outright that this is what they want. So now it's time for us to be much more direct and more intentional about destroying inequality.
Yeah. And Jamon, your position in the city as the first official historian that we have, I think is a nod to the importance of these issues here in Detroit, and the power that is being assigned, I think, to dealing with those issues. I mean, the idea that we have somebody full time thinking about all of these things and how they affect us now.
That's right. That's right. So, being appointed the official historian for the city of Detroit, people know who I am and they know what I do and they know what I talk about. So, by me being chosen for that, it really means the city is making a statement that they're not going to run away from the history, first of the city of Detroit, its own inequality and its own practices of dislocation, removing, destroying African-American communities, its own practices of racism and police brutality, of school inequality. It's not going to run away from that history, because if I'm going to be in the position, I'm going to be talking about the same things that I've been talking about for a long time in my other life. So yes, I think that it's good that the city is willing to reckon with its own history.
Yeah, yeah. Desiree, I want to bring you into the conversation and remind you of the conversations that you and I have had in the past that touch on these themes of opportunity and inequality. You, I think, take this very broad approach to those subjects and have written and thought a lot about how they reach beyond race, how they reach beyond gender, how they reach beyond geography. This is a part of us as Detroiters and Americans that reaches into every part of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to have a super nod to Jaman and his appointment in that position, because I think this is emblematic of many ways that you affect change. And that is, you don't take leadership from people who haven't experienced, don't have real life experience in the problem you're trying to solve. And by not getting someone who's maybe in an ivory tower in academia somewhere, or at the top echelons of a corporate environment, but someone who's been out there talking about it on the streets, in the neighborhood, and lived it is huge. And I think that might be actually one of Detroit's strengths. I'm not an outsider. I mean, I lived in Detroit for 30 years.
Yeah,
but I did come. I say I adulted in Detroit. I came as a young adult and did all my sort of real growing up there. And what stunned me that Detroiters do not realize is we will not let the questions of those problems go.
What do you mean by that?
I found myself at universities, I found myself at nonprofits, I found myself in law firms, because I had a schizophrenic career in Detroit. And everywhere, somebody was going to say something about race, something, and it wasn't always the person of color in the room. It was going to get raised and talked about. The fact, Stephen, that a public radio station of this caliber serving this particular community is dedicating its time to that question of equality says a lot. How many other shows are there like that?
Sure.
You know? So we are obsessed by it. And I think it's a healthy obsession. But Detroiters often say, we're tired of talking about it, blah, blah. Okay, yeah, but you do keep talking. Mm-hmm. And you do keep bringing people to the table. And I think that, you know, we are not spiraling downward. I think for decades, we have been, it's more like a slinky. We've been spiraling upwards, but it has been a spiral. So we go in circles and then we find we're on the next level. So it's been really, really slow because the bottom was the bottom. But I do think that conversation across sectors has never been something we forgot how to do.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to also talk about opportunity, because that's the kind of flip side of inequality. And in this new show, we really do want to focus on both. We want to talk about the chance that things can get better. We want to talk about the ways that things can move forward, in addition to the ways that they're being held back. And so I would love for both of you to just talk just a little bit about this moment and opportunity, where you see opportunity, what you hope comes from opportunity, and what the call is to those of us who care about that to make sure it grows. Jaman?
Yeah, so I always look at history as my guide, and doing every era where inequality has been present, really in the world, but I'm going to specifically talk about Detroit. But anytime you have this level of inequality, you have this resistance to it. There's people who are resisting it. There are people who are being the targets of the inequality. They're resisting it, and then there are people who are not the targets, but join with the targets.
Allies
who fight against this inequality. And so that's always been the case, and that's been the case in the city of Detroit. Detroit, of course, was founded. It became a town of the French, and when the French arrived, they had slavery. But, of course, Detroit is also the place where the abolitionist movement and the Underground Railroad was one of its strongest sites, was the city of Detroit. And so you see that history, and that's, a strong multiracial movement. Is the fight against against slavery and the capturing of people who are escaping from slavery, freedom seekers. And then, of course, when we get to the period post-slavery, of course, Michigan is going to put a prohibition against slavery in its state constitution, which, of course, the celebration, it was just recently, January 26th, Michigan became a state. And when it became a state in its constitution, slavery is prohibited. So in that 1837, the state has said officially, we don't support slavery. And it will pass a number of laws to make it difficult for slave catchers to come to the city of Detroit. So you see these opportunities, although we had this inequality, you see these different opportunities being created. And so that's always been the case in the city of Detroit. And so I see that now as we see present forms of inequality surface and continue. And we see this level of resistance. And as this level of resistance grows, there are allies who go on to the side of the people who are at the front lines, the vanguard group who is fighting against this inequality. You get allies joining them.
Yeah. Desiree, talk about opportunity. What are the opportunities that we see right now, and what does it call us? What does it call us to do?
I think the biggest opportunity we have right now is learning how to coexist, not city versus suburbs, but in a more diverse city. Detroit has sort of built its in recent times. I don't want Jaman to correct me. In recent times, our pride is around our grit and our blackness, the black empowerment, and a city where you are comfortable being an African American and your culture is respected and honored and celebrated. Okay, that's great. Now, but we have said that we want more resources. Well, people don't often just throw resources over without being there to also partake in it. And so that has opened up more in-migration of diverse people, particularly whites, but not only. And so the question is, how do we take this opportunity now that we do have many different kinds of people interested? We have people moving nationally. We have people moving internationally because they're curious about Detroit and they've heard things about Detroit. So are we prepared to move over, to share? What does sharing mean? And what do the people who are coming in expect? Are they expecting a blank slate? Are they discovering Detroit and therefore it's there for the taking? Or are they integrating into a cultural and social framework that they appreciate? Like the reason they came is because that's what allured them and that they appreciate that. So there's an opportunity now to remake, broaden, redefine what it means to be like a grassroots Detroiter.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this first episode of Created Equal with Jaman Jordan and Desiree Cooper. We are not taking calls today, but don't worry. We are still going to want to hear what you have to say. about the things that we talk about on this new show. We're just doing it in a different way. So starting Thursday, we're going to have a full hour of call-ins. In each week, we're going to pose a question to you, our listeners. The topic can range from politics to pop culture. And then on Thursdays, we're going to open up the lines for the whole hour and hear what you have to say. This week's topic is going to be reparations, something we are talking about an awful lot these days in the city of Detroit and all over the country. How should America redress this historic wrong that was done to African Americans? And what form, if we're going to have reparations, should they take? Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad that you have joined us. This is the first episode of Created Equal, which is replacing Detroit Today, which I hosted for 9 years here on WDET. This new show is going to lean much harder into questions about opportunity and inequality, not just here in the city of Detroit, but how what we're dealing with and experiencing here relates to the bigger questions that we face as a nation. We've got two great guests helping us kick off this new show, Jamon Jordan. Also with us is Desiree Cooper. She is an award-winning author and poet. Right before the break, Desiree, we were talking a little bit about what's going on here in the city of Detroit with change. The city is changing really profoundly, I think. I mean, I was born here in the early 70s and really came to know the city as an African-American city, as a black city, right? And that's the first generation, really, that understood that. I feel like that is changing really profoundly and that kids growing up here now are having a different experience. That can be frightening, I suppose, and that can be a challenge. But you were talking about how it was perhaps an opportunity. Talk about a little more of how do we make sure that people don't get left out, left behind while the city goes through this transformation?
Yeah, I mean, that is the question, right? You know, there's this feeling that that a certain generation held it together with bubble gum and string. And now that Detroit is enjoying a little bit more popularity, people want to sort of just come in and snatch it from under them. One thing I always heard in Detroit for a million years was like, downtown, why are you focusing on downtown when the neighborhoods are suffering? Mm-hmm. And that became sort of an us-them conversation. Well, guess what? Downtown is a neighborhood.
It is now. Right. In ways it wasn't when I was a kid. Right.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. And so that's an interesting now the paradigm has shifted a little bit because it's not I would say that probably you have a certain type of person or people that are living in Detroit downtown, probably more with means, often without children, either younger or older. Mm-hmm. And so that can mean certain things, but it's not necessarily a racial divide.
What do you mean by that? What is the divide if it's not race?
It might be socioeconomic. Yeah. And I think there is I don't know how many actual families, by percent of people living in Detroit. I know there's areas near downtown where there's a lot of neighborhood family kind of life. So it's a certain kind of person. But my point being is like, can we see Detroit's downtown being a generator for neighborhood development? First of all, it is increasing the tax base. It is attracting other people into the city who had not considered living there before. It is creating a density, which is key to a whole lot of things. But one of the things is crime prevention. That when you have spaces, public spaces that defend themselves, meaning lots of traffic, lots of eyes on this. Let's look at the riverfront. Let's look at Dequindre Cut. Let's look at, you know, parks. When you're doing that kind of developing, the places have a feeling, an air of safety. It's more of an urban, a luxurious urban environment.
Sure.
As opposed to a dangerous urban, whether or not it's true. Okay, the reality versus the experience are two different things. And so how can downtown as a neighborhood start to generate more for those areas that are not downtown? For example, how far out is downtown? What is downtown?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the questions that we're facing right now, I think, with this project to remake I-375 into a street, right? That really would kind of extend the east side of downtown more into Lafayette Park and the other neighborhoods over there. But you know, I want to go back to this idea of taking what's happening downtown and making it matter to places that aren't downtown. I think that is absolutely the most critical question that we face. And I always say that is the job, the very job of city government, right? To leverage this new interest and enthusiasm and investment in one part of the city so that it benefits people who might not ever go to that part of the city, right? And certainly don't live there. And I don't feel like we've done the best job of that, you know, and it's early. I mean, we're probably a decade and a half now into the real aggressive kind of investments that we've seen.
But aren't you seeing like effects in North End? Aren't you seeing the nearer east side getting some? I mean, it is glacial. I'm going to grant you that. But
is.
I remember a Detroit where downtown was downtown, New Center was New Center. And then, you know, that was kind of it in terms of a critical mass. Midtown was barely anything. Now between downtown, Midtown, and New Center, it's almost contiguous. There's a lot that needs to be done.
North End,
for example.
Right. Go ahead, Jamon.
Yeah, so one of the things that I believe would change the way we talk about this is if the critical mass of people, like you've got a significant number of people who've relocated to the city of Detroit and they're living downtown, midtown, in the near downtown areas, Lafayette Park. So I'm seeing that. What would be a critical mass is if those people are now, we see them involved in things that are not where, just downtown. Mm-hmm. So like Desiree's already said that many of them are young or they don't have children. When we see those people who are, whether it's they're at a different socioeconomic level, but they're African American, or if they're not even of the same race, they're whites or other non-African Americans, when we see their children at Denby. When we see their children at the neighborhood schools, then we will begin to see, number one, they're being seen not as living in a suburb, because for many people in the city of Detroit, downtown has become almost like a suburb in the city of Detroit.
Right.
And so we don't see them as living like that. They're Detroiters now, number one. And number two, if those things happen, we know, just historically, we know that when the schools are more are less African American dominated in population, that resources with those
follow.
They follow those. So the schools will become less unequal as different groups of people become students at those schools
and invested in it, and so all those things
begin to happen. And so right now we have like we don't want to see it that way, but it's like downtown is its own thing.
Right.
And the rest of the city is something else, which you said earlier. That's a challenge that we need to overcome, that downtown shouldn't be separate.
It should be fueling the change
in
other parts.
Right.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, how can it be a generator? And when you get to education, man.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the golden goose, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to have that for any city to survive or thrive. And we have not done nearly enough here to make sure that that works. So I want to ask you both also, why does that, what we were just talking about, why does that matter outside of Detroit? What does that tell us about America, that struggle that we're having here, this tension, this opportunity because of this change? You know, part of the premise of the show is Detroit is ground zero mm-hmm. for all of these conversations, all these issues. But talk about why that's true, Jaman.
Yeah, so it's true because, as you stated, Detroit really gives us the bird's eye view. It allows us to really see the lens. Through the lens of Detroit, you can see the inequality of America. And so if you're talking about housing discrimination or housing segregation, Detroit is ground zero for that. It is the Sipes versus McGee case, which will be joined with another case to make it to the Supreme Court, Shelley versus Kramer, which will overturn race restrictive covenants as being constitutional to be enforced by the government. It is Detroit that
comes out of here.
It comes out of Detroit. Community. It is Detroit that is going to really push the limits of what school inequality and school integration is going to be with Milliken v. Bradley in 1974. That's when the Supreme Court says, okay, this is the limit. We're not going any further than what we proposed in Brown v. Board. We're not going to be forcing cities to bus students to suburbs, and we're not going to force suburbs to accept these students from the inner city, which, of course, created a Supreme Court enforced or a Supreme Court endorsed school inequality. Yeah. Now you can go to a suburb and not ever have to worry about African Americans being at those schools from the city of Detroit, because if you move away, you can have an all-white school again.
Right.
And it can be unequal, and the resources can be unequal. And so we see this, and Detroit had this major fight over police brutality. Of course, it exploded with the 1967 uprising, but it didn't end there, because stress is created after the 1967 uprising. And so we get Stop the Robberies, Enjoy Safe Streets, which was really nothing but a brutal elite police force, and a lot of these elite police forces around the country are dealing with these repercussions right now. In Memphis, the Scorpion team or Scorpion
just a
unit.
Version of just, stress.
Modern version of stress. Yeah. You know, they killed Tyree Nichols, and the video shows that it's just really a brutal killing. Well, Detroit had to deal with that. We were ground zero for police brutality, school inequality, housing discrimination, and job discrimination. So all of those facets of inequality that we think of around the country, Detroit has been a center of the fight against it, and of course, the victim of many of these forms of inequality.
Yeah, and Desiree, one of the other things I always think about when I think about Detroit is how opportunity is also finds its parents here mm-hmm. in the city of Detroit. So Henry Ford perfects this idea of mass production of a car, mm-hmm. Which of course is applied to lots of other things, and the work that goes into that creates this idea of a middle class. Mm-hmm. That's all ours. We did that then shared it with everybody else. And mm-hmm. and so when we talk about the problems that we've had, mm-hmm. they also walk alongside all of these things that we created and gave to America to create what we have now.
That's right.
Absolutely. And that's writ big and small. I mean, I find that Detroit is a town that is definitely willing to experiment. And they're also often, and I don't mean like the government, I mean the people. or not necessarily the government. Because the people have felt like there's, you know, no one's coming to save us. So now mm-hmm. what do we do? Okay, well, we're going to police our own block. Okay, right. we don't need. We're going to create our own Angels Night Army. Mm-hmm. You know, if no one's coming to save us, we're going to do that. So there's such bustling entrepreneurial spirit in Detroit that is literally kitchen table kinds mm-hmm. of businesses, and it is such an ethic. In Detroit that only now I think is being buoyed by some philanthropic investment. You have, you know, mini grants and things like that from foundations. You have some businesses doing incubators and things like that. Well, we've been you know, doing that for a long time. And, you know, wow, take all of that spirit and just look at what happened on Livernois. How many of the businesses that went into those stores were actually pop-ups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, the Avenue of Fashion.
Yeah.
That's right.
There were lots of businesses that got grants, got a little bit of starter capital. They went through Textown, that kind of thing. So I think that where there is nothing, there is room for creativity for something.
Wow,
and
that's right.
We've done that, even with education.
We do that over and over here in Detroit.
We do it over and over, but that's it's a strength. Right. It's something that can be leveraged, but also other places can sort of see that example. So it's not just the assembly line.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, it's how neighborhoods look at the urban farming, and it's not the trendy, sexy urban farming necessarily. Mm-hmm. But people have been turning their entire backyards into gardens for a very long time. We're Southerners.
Our entire side lots, right? Everyone.
Entire side lots. And that whole idea of you may not own it, but you live near it, so you're responsible for it. So take it and cultivate it. Take it, make a playground. I mean, these are things that we've been doing for a long time that then government, be planners, whatever, can look at what's happening and support that so that it can flourish and come up to scale.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking with Jamon Jordan and Desiree Cooper here on the first episode of Created Equal. We'll be right back. To Created Equal on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us for this first episode. We've got Jamon Jordan with us. He is Detroit's first official historian and founder of the Black Scroll Network. We also have Desiree Cooper with us. She is an award-winning author and journalist and poet whose work really crystallizes the issues of opportunity and inequality. Desiree, a lot of your work, we've been talking, of course, a lot about race, which is, a central theme of any discussion about inequality. But it's not the only one.
That's
And your work really, I think, expands, I guess, the franchise of discussion about inequality to talk about other forms that that are just as important.
Well, one big teacher we recently got was COVID, and to really highlight a lot of inequalities, especially disparities in healthcare, that are along racial lines, are along socioeconomic lines, but also how hard that whole pandemic hit women and families, women in particular, mothers of school-aged children, because the front was on so many levels at that point. And so one thing that, because the education system broke down, the healthcare system broke down, the childcare system broke down. And so all the support, all the levels of support that we would have for a healthy family growth was gone.
And it all fell on women. All of those things you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. And so, you know, we can now look around and go, whoa, what was that? And how do we take the role of women seriously? How do we respect the contributions that women make to all aspects of life? How do we respect their bodies politically speaking, in healthcare? Why are women dying in childbirth in this country? or as a result of pregnancy in this country. Mm-hmm. What is that about? And so I think there are so many conversations that can be made that systems were built around assumptions about women's roles that didn't exist then, but certainly no longer exist. And that's just huge on my heart. That's something that's a really big one for me.
Yeah. I mean, the COVID example is I think, super powerful. And that's something that we aren't recovering from. No. I feel like what's happening is that people are moving on and saying, well, the pandemic is over, but the effects, those systemic effects that you're talking about are just compounding as we move away from the threat of the disease itself.
Yeah, I mean, could it possibly be that the inequalities just got deeper and are going to stay that way? I mean, I hope not, but it's kind of looking that way to me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead, Jamon.
Yeah, that's exactly. I'm agreeing with Desiree that COVID really laid bare these inequalities that existed. It made it very clear, and it also deepened some of those inequalities. It made it worse than it already was. And as Stephen just stated, that what we're now doing is we're living with the after effects. It's like, hey, you survived the fight with Mike Tyson, but that's it. You survived it. So you're living with the after effects of getting in the ring with Mike Tyson.
Yeah,
and we're, you know, our society is really still living with the effects of after getting beat up by a very hard boxer in the ring, and we have not yet recovered. Although we're here, we're not recovered.
Yeah. Well, and here in the city of Detroit, especially.
Yes.
Jamon. Yes. You and I talked a lot during the pandemic, and on Detroit Today, we focused every day on who's still here, who's surviving, how are we surviving, how do we survive together, and the losses that we took in that early period of 2020 were just devastating. I know you personally you lost a lot.
Yes. Yeah, my mother, of course, passed away, and really, as Desiree stated, because women, in specifically African Americans, also and others, particularly in the lower socioeconomic level, they're working. And they're in the places that have the most contact with the community. So it's unequal. If you are the CEO of a company, you are less likely to have dealt with catching the virus or passing it on to people in your family. You're less likely to have done that. But if you're the bus driver, if you are working the cashier, you're a cashier at a supermarket, or you are a police officer or anything like that, you're constantly—
or any kind of caregiver.
Any kind of caregiver, you're constantly in contact with other people. And if you're the one being cared for, you're in one of those care facilities, you are also at risk. And so many, of course, as we saw the inequality of COVID, we saw women are overrepresented in these arenas. Mm. And so they put a humongous price on women, and they're in these facilities and they're bringing it home to their families. And so we see that inequality definitely played a part in the pandemic. The pandemic wasn't just the virus. It was the system, the social system that America has that increased the strength of that virus.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And look at the aging, like, you know, that's another issue. Stephen, you mentioned when you were growing up, the decades, and I'm like, dang, he's a baby.
Not that much younger than you are.
Anyway, well, I've been taking care of senior parents, and I did that through COVID. But, you know, how do we age? I always say there's no way to bring people into this world, and there's no way to escort them with honor and respect out.
Wow.
There's no plan. There is no plan in the United States for that. Mm-hmm. Everybody makes it up. Everybody makes it up.
That's right.
That stinks. And I, you know, woe are to the people that are living in areas where they cannot afford to move, in substandard housing. They are abandoned there. They don't have access to transportation and support. Aging in an urban environment can be quite challenging. Mm-hmm. I think given how Detroit has been abandoned itself, it's left behind a lot of seniors or people that have the least amount of resources and wherewithal to just try to get it on their own. So that's another group mm-hmm. of people that I worry about a lot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So we've got a few minutes left. One of the things that I want to also make sure we do on this show, this new show, is talk about the power of our culture here in the city mm-hmm. and the joy that we find in Detroit and build and make in Detroit, and how that also has influenced mm-hmm. so much in the world. I mean, our music,
that's right.
Our art,
that's right.
Our ingenuity, all of these great things about us that we export every day. Jaman, yeah. That's a huge part of who we are.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So Detroit's grit, but also Detroit's ingenuity, Detroit's culture is its most powerful thing. It's the most powerful thing that comes out of the city of Detroit. People outside of the city of Detroit talk about Detroit, and they say Motown. They talk about Aretha. They talk about Detroit's teams, our sports teams. They talk about these aspects of the city of Detroit that are so Detroit. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason we have a Motown and the reason why it's in Detroit and not somewhere else is directly related to Detroit's history. There is no Motown unless you have the Flame Show Bar yes. on John R. and Canfield. You don't get a Motown without that. That's you don't right. get the Flame Show Bar on John R. and Canfield without Paradise Valley, this earlier history of African-American business owners who were into entertainment. You don't get that without Black Bottom, these African-Americans who are coming from down south, coming to the city of Detroit to get jobs in the factories, particularly the auto factories, but other jobs. And they're coming here in large numbers and creating a whole new community. And you don't get Black Bottom without this earlier fight of African-Americans living in that neighborhood who were part of the Underground Railroad. Mm. All of these things are connected, and they're connected to our religious life, our churches. They're connected to our business life. They're connected to the jobs we had in those factories, that grit that was necessary to work in the foundries, because when Henry Ford offered $5 a day to all workers, African-Americans had to work in the grinding and sanding operation and in the foundries, which, of course, was the most dirty, dangerous, and difficult job.
Part of it, yeah.
So that is part of what goes into creating the Detroit culture. So when Aretha moves here, when Reverend C.L. Franklin moves here in 1946 and lives on 649 East Boston, well, right around the corner from that big home on East Boston are two family flats of working class people. And there's a young boy living around the corner named Smokey Robinson.
Right.
And so all of that is part of this culture in the city of Detroit that helped create the ground for that I stand on. I grew up like Steven, same era, mm-hmm. it's the 70s and 80s, and I'm growing up in the city of Detroit, and all of that is a given. Aretha being a Detroiter is already a given. Yeah. Motown is already a given, but that comes from that earlier history, that grit of working in the factories, that coming from down south, leaving sugar, cotton plantations as a sharecropper, and working in the factories, that comes from Black Bottom, Paradise Valley, that comes from the artwork and the poetry of Dudley Randall, that comes from all of that grit and all of those battles, the 1943 race riot, the 1967 rebellion, the fight against police brutality and stress, the election of Coleman Young in 1973, all of that makes up that grit in the city of Detroit. And you don't get the Detroit culture that we have today without understanding all of that deep, strong history.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Desiree, when people come to visit—
I don't have anything to say. I think he just said it. Amen.
Yes, you do. when people come to visit, I always make sure that they see things like the DIA here, uh-huh. right? Mm-hmm. Which is not just a museum, right?
Right?
I mean, you go to other cities, everyone has an art museum. This is a beacon of
right.
Of celebration, not just of art, but of this city.
Mm-hmm.
I take people to Rivera Court mm-hmm. and just let them stand there mm-hmm. and look
right.
at this
right.
incredible work mm-hmm. that Diego Rivera came to our city mm-hmm. to create.
Right.
You know, to me, that's not just pride. Mm-hmm. That's about joy. Mm-hmm. It's about mm-hmm. what's cool and great about being yeah. a Detroiter.
That's right.
Well, one thing is you can't export Detroit pride. Mm-hmm. So you can build it and you can participate in it. It's mm-hmm. joy, but that's not something other cities can learn from. Because
you don't think so?
No, it's ours and we don't share. And the other thing about it is we have, you know, litmus tests. Like, are you really from Detroit?
That's right. Are you real Detroit? That's right. We're not getting into that, are we?
Well, I'm just saying that's kind of part of the joy. Like, we have a machismo about
all of that.
Right. And I think it's well deserved.
Jamon Jordan and Desiree Cooper, I can't think of two better people to kick off this first episode of Created Equal. Thank you so much for joining us. Come back tomorrow for a conversation with best-selling author and professor Carol Anderson. We'll try to answer the question, what really divides America? On Thursday, we're going to open up the phone lines on Created Equal and ask you the question, what should reparations look like for Detroiters? Journalist and historian Ken Coleman will join us for the hour. Created Equal is produced by Carey Jr. II and David Lines. Music is by Sam Bobian, and our executive producer is Adam Fox. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.